Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us here on the Mona Charon Show. My guest today is one of the most incisive observers of the political scene, Jonathan Chait of The Atlantic Magazine. Jonathan has had a couple of really, he always has excellent work, but in particular, in the wake of the Charlie Kirk assassination, I think Jonathan has cut to the essence of the challenge that this poses to us as a country. Jonathan, there's been a lot of effort, I think, well-meaning, to say, well, you know, people are very upset, and certainly the MAGA forces and Republicans feel that they are being hunted. There were assassination attempts, after all, on Trump himself. And now this, and therefore we have to bear in mind that they are very upset, and that's fine. Let's bear that in mind. But there's another way of looking at this, which is that this tragedy, this assassination, is being used as a pretext for an authoritarian attack on all criticism of the president, and all opposition.
Right.
Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you expressed the opposing view well, but the word I want to focus on is feel. And it's right. You're correctly describing how they feel. Now, you're describing a view that you're critiquing as well as I am. But they always feel upset. They felt upset in 2020 that the election was being stolen from Donald Trump. But that doesn't mean you need to indulge their feelings. You mm-hmm. need to extend to them the same rights that they deserve as all other Americans. Donald Trump was entitled to certain legal rights. He was entitled to recounts. He was entitled to a free and fair counting of the ballots. But he wasn't entitled to become president in an election he lost.
So you're right. They are always upset, and they are great at creating crises even where none exist. We have seen that again and again, the pretext of, you know, the caravans were heading to the border, the crime rate is out of control. Therefore, we have to send in troops to American cities. They can create a crisis. But in this case, this idiot who murdered Charlie Kirk gave them on a silver platter something really precious.
Right.
He gave them a martyr,
right.
A martyr who, now they were ready to canonize Ashley Babbitt, who stormed the Capitol and was killed in the process. They were ready to canonize her, but this is beyond all of that.
It's different.
Only some what you see,
right? And it's an important difference, right? Only the most fanatical Trumpists are willing to canonize Ashley Babbitt. Most of them don't want to talk about her, don't want to talk about January 6th. They'll tolerate it, but they sort of wish that issue would go away. Charlie Kirk is different. They all want to talk about Charlie Kirk. And you're right. It's because here is really a case where they truly were someone they admire, and in many cases are friends of, was horribly murdered. I mean, it was a terrible, terrible tragedy.
Yes.
What they want to do with this, though, is cement a view that political violence is synonymous with the left. It is not a problem on the political right. The political right has no obligation to renounce it because it's completely innocent of political violence, number one. And a leapfrog from this erroneous interpretation of what political violence has looked like in this country to a very scary authoritarian crackdown on the left, because they're equating political violence entirely with the left. That means the solution is not to crack down on violence per se, but to crack down on the left. That's what the article I've got coming out tries to trace, is what they're doing.
Are you somebody who gets really hot while they're sleeping? Well, I'm one of those people. I also get really cold. It gets so complicated. But recently, the nice people at Ghostbed sent us two pillows that were advertised as staying cool all night long. I was skeptical. Well, maybe I'm just naturally skeptical. But darn it, these pillows genuinely do stay cool. I don't know what they do, but you touch it. It's definitely a cool to the touch feel. These pillows come in firm or medium firm. My husband loves them. So, and I like a little bit of a softer pillow, so it wasn't exactly for me, but I can testify that these are incredibly well made. And they do stay cool. So enjoy. Ghostbed provides high quality and super comfortable award-winning mattresses and pillows crafted in the United States and Canada. Did you know that 60% of U.S. adults report being too hot when they're trying to sleep? That's why Ghostbed designs all their products with these cooling features so that people can stay comfortable and asleep all night long. You can pair any of their mattresses with their award-winning adjustable base and get the ultimate sleep experience. There are three different types of mattresses, all designed to help you sleep deeper, longer, cooler, and more comfortably. The Ghost Bed Lux, the coolest bed in the world, is the most popular and features their signature Ghost Ice cooling technology with 8 layers of comfort and a balanced medium feel. Choosing a mattress is, of course, personal, but it doesn't need to be stressful. They say that you can take their founder Mark's mattress quiz and answer just a few questions about your sleeping style and preferences and get a personalized mattress recommendation. Fair prices and real quality don't always go together, but they do at Ghostbed. Ghostbed has helped thousands of customers find the right mattress for their sleep needs so they can wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Their online mattress quiz makes it simple, or give their U.S.-based sleep experts a call anytime to get personalized guidance even without leaving your house. Once you've gotten your mattress, you have 101 nights to try it risk-free. Plus, mattresses ship free and fast and are backed by a 20 to 25 year warranty for added peace of mind. Honestly, those pillows are incredibly solid and well made, so I believe them. Right now, as one of my loyal listeners, you can get 25% off site-wide for a limited time. Just go to ghostbed.com/Mona and use promo code Mona at checkout. That's ghostbed.com/Mona, promo code Mona. Upgrade your sleep with Ghostbed, the makers of the coolest beds in the world. Some exclusions apply. See site for details. So I was struck, I wonder if you were, by the reaction of some Republicans. You know, there is still muscle memory out there among Republicans that at a moment like this, it's up to all of us to set a good example and to denounce all violence and to stress that we are all about, we should be above this sort of thing. And you saw this from James Lankford. You saw this from Katie Britt, a few other, but in every case, when they were pressed on Trump's language, they couldn't bring themselves to say that what Trump had done was actually putting fuel on the fire. Lankford sort of almost subtweeted it. I mean, he said, you know, I tell my staff that when there's a fire, you should pour water, not gasoline on it, you know, and, but he would not, of course, he cannot criticize the president himself. And so the whole party, it seems to me, is constrained. Even the people with the best will in the world, because Trump is the leader, cannot do the civic hygiene that this kind of a moment demands.
Yeah, that's actually the very event that made me write my latest article in The Atlantic, watching people like Lankford and some of his colleagues make very responsible comments, the kind of comments that leaders in both parties have always made traditionally when there's an act of political violence, and to have them be viciously attacked from the right as apostates because they said this, because they denounced political violence. That's no longer an acceptable thing to say in very large swaths of the Republican Party.
That's right. I saw a piece in The Federalist denouncing Katie Britt as a – right, exactly. Okay.
And another one about Lankford. Yeah.
So let's talk also, though, about the religious iconography that we're seeing here regarding Charlie Kirk. Right. I mean, the ceremony that was held at the Kennedy Center was something else. You had Speaker Mike Johnson say that he praised Kirk as a man of deep faith and conviction, which is fine as far as it goes. But then he said that his movement was a ministry rooted in the belief that, quote, our rights do not derive from a state or a king. They come from the King of Kings. Tulsi Gabbard at this same gathering said,
Is that Donald Trump, the King of Kings?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. Tulsi Gabbard said that the people, the protesters outside the Kennedy Center were rejecting God, that they have made God their enemy. And you've got people, members of Congress saying that the other side is evil, that this is a matter not of politics, but of good versus evil.
Right. Here's what I think they're attempting to do here. Political violence is horrible. It's also something that happens periodically throughout American history. There were shootings of two legislators in Minnesota earlier this year.
Which, Trump completely failed to mention in his litany.
Failed to mention because he's trying to show it's something on the political right. So what they're trying to do with this event is to take it out of the context of these tragedies that recur on a routine basis, or at least periodic basis, and make it a completely unique event, right? Something kind of 9/11 or a Pearl Harbor. Right, something totally different from any other political murder or attempted murder that we've seen, and because they're trying to create a state of emergency, for which they can carry out this agenda to crack down on the left. So I think all these displays are intended to do this. Another move they're making that I think is related to what you just described is to change the bar of what's acceptable to talk about Charlie Kirk. The bar they're trying to set is not, are you opposing violence against him, but are you endorsing his legacy? And they've gotten past just kind of finding people on social media who said, I'm not upset that Charlie Kirk is dead, and finding people on social media who said, like, I am upset he's dead, but let's not pretend he was a good guy or that his ideas were good. And they're going after those people, which is an entirely different standard, and just entirely different set of values that's inscribed in those actions.
Yes. You will praise him or we will come after you is the message.
And if you don't have to praise him, but at least if you say he shouldn't have been shot, but I don't like what he stood for.
Yeah,
that is now
that's enough.
Tantamount to endorsing the murder in their eyes.
Right. And,
time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
One other aspect of this that's gotten a lot of attention, and you were the only one who saw it the way I did. Now, I admit, I don't look at X very much at all, and so maybe I'm missing some of the stuff.
That's a boast, not an admission.
Maybe some of the stuff that's out there is just, I just missed it. I'll cop to that. But I was looking for the Dancing on Charlie Kirk's Grave stuff kind of aggressively. All, you know, days and days I spent looking for it. Because I kept hearing that, you know, this is what had set off the right, was that the left was celebrating and cheering this act of murder. Now, bear in mind, there was a lot of cheering when the health CEO was murdered in New York. That I did see. It was all, and that was disgusting and upsetting. And so I was prepared to believe that there were a lot of people online, maybe a lot of Democrats, who were saying who were cheering or celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk. And instead, what I found was that leading Democrats, from former presidents to former secretaries of state and sitting members, were all entirely responsible. And even, right, you know, democratically affiliated celebrities were saying all the right things, which is, right, I may not have liked the guy, but this is a terrible thing. I feel for his family. You know, let's pray for America. This is bad. And so, as you pointed out in your piece, and thank you for writing it, when they had to create this narrative that there was dancing on the grave. And so they found these randos on, yeah, Twitter, or elsewhere on social media, sort of unknown people, you know, in a country of, yeah, 330 million unknown people who had said offensive and terrible things, right, but they weren't leading Democrats. It wasn't the left even. It was random people.
They weren't even secondary Democrats. It's not as if the leadership was saying one thing and the left wing bomb throwers like, you know, AOC or Ilhan Omar were dancing on Charlie Kirk's grave. They weren't. And it's not even as if people below that, you couldn't find, like, they didn't even find a single, I don't think, state legislator. You know how many Democratic state legislators there are in the United States of America? They didn't find a single one endorsing this murder. But they're like entire articles about, here's a school teacher in New Jersey and here's a florist in Oklahoma. Look at these terrible things they're saying. They've disproved the point they're attempting to make by focusing so heavily. The fact that they have to display such pathetic examples just shows how little they were able to find.
Also, as you pointed out, and this deserves underlining, in some cases, people did post very tasteless or awful things.
Right.
But in other cases that they are pointing to as evidence of celebration, it was merely things like, let's not forget what Charlie Kirk stood for. Let's not forget that he did X, Y, and Z or said these terrible things. Let's not make a hero out of him. Sorry that this happened, but.
And more prominent people have said things like that. That's not a marginal sentiment. That's a common sentiment. But that's also, mm-hmm, not the same thing as saying he deserved to be murdered.
Exactly. But they are lumping those things together.
Right.
So J.D. Vance, again, appearing on Charlie Kirk's podcast as the fill-in. So he's trying to, obviously, inherit Charlie Kirk's following. And he said this. He said, the most important truth Charlie told is this, that long ago a man begotten, not made, came down from heaven and by the Holy Spirit was incarnate of the Virgin Mary and became man for our sake. He was crucified, on and on. This is not what we are accustomed to. In my political life, I've been paying attention to public affairs for a long time. And, yeah, one of the things that always characterized invocations of religion by leading figures in American life was that it was always done ecumenically. It was always done with, you know, sort of saying, you know, the good Lord and, you know, and we invoke providence and terms like that. To speak very explicitly from the Nicene Creed, which was what Vance was doing, it really does inject. Well, tell me what you think of it. I mean, did it shock you the way it did me? Not shock, but did you notice it?
It seems to me like this is a strain of conservative politics that has been prominent on the right and maybe gaining slow force within the Republican Party for maybe four decades, right? I don't see this as being a distinct hallmark of the Trump era. I see this as something that began with the movement of the religious right into the Republican Party with Falwell and Pat Robertson in the late 70s and early 80s, and then just gained more and more force in the Reagan era, the George W. Bush era. And now I think you have just incrementally greater representation for that way of thinking, this sort of movement from a kind of ecumenical religiosity to the straightforward belief that America is a Christian country.
Yeah. Right?
That people of other, of some other religions are entitled to live here. Like Jews can be here as kind of little buddies of the Christians. Muslims may not be entitled to live here at all. And people in other religions maybe are somewhere in between Jews and Muslims in terms of what class citizen they're supposed to inhabit.
Well, it is autumn, and if you're like me, you have started to notice it in your skin and in your hair. Things start to get dried out. You get flaky skin. Your hair feels dry. It loses its luster. Maybe you've been noticing hair loss or thinning or shedding. Well, the scientists at OneSkin have developed a scalp serum called OS1 Hair that targets the dysfunctional aging cells that cause it. In a clinical study, participants saw on average a 40% increase in hair density after 6 months. And in a consumer perception study, 75% had new hair growth after just 3 months. For those of you who are familiar with OneSkin, you know that their patented OS1 peptide is scientifically proven to target aging at the cellular level. It's what powers their skin and sun care. Now it's targeting age-related hair loss and thinning. OneSkin was founded in 2016 by an all-woman team of scientists with PhDs in skin regeneration, stem cell biology, immunology, and bioinformatics. After testing the efficacy of more than 900 so-called anti-aging peptides, they developed the OS1 peptide, the first ingredient to reverse skin's biological age by reducing the accumulation of senescent cells, a key driver of skin aging. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. For a limited time, you can try OneSkin with 15% off using the code MonaCharon at oneskin.co. That's 15% at oneskin.co with code MonaCharon. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. Again, OneSkin consumers are obsessed with this new launch, saying things like, my hair feels fuller and looks smoother and shinier. And who doesn't want that? So try OS1 Hair and get 15% off your first 3 month supply with code MonaCharon at oneskin.co. So perhaps I'm making too much of this, but I think it's different when there's a martyr, when there's a death, like Jesus's death, you know, where you can then really bring it. And there are, when you look at some of the comments from the Christian nationalists, you know, we have to strap on the armor of God and march. You know, this is a call to arms that I do think is a step beyond what we've seen before. But tell us about your piece by the time this airs, will have been published, where your point is that this is an attempt to silence dissent.
It is. I mean, I think they've had this plan in the works for a long time. I think it maybe was a little bit of a difficult thing for them to move forward on Because just coming out and saying we are cracking down on the political left, right? We are going to selectively target left-wing nonprofits. We are going to try to destroy the infrastructure of progressive groups in this country would be controversial even among some Republicans, right? I mean, I think that that's just such a nakedly authoritarian move that I think that would cause some complaints. I think in the Kirk assassination, they really recognized an opportunity to create an atmosphere of emergency that would allow them to go forward with this, I think, indisputably authoritarian agenda to just try to crack down on and destroy the left. I mean, Stephen Miller was ranting and screaming. You guys have written about this in the Bulwark, about how we're going to, you know, go after the left by any means. It could be RICO, it could be tax fraud, it could be, we're just going to find something.
Right. Their tax exempt status, et cetera.
Yeah. We're just going to find something to go after you, and we just need to crush the left. And this has been the NatCon agenda for a long time. But I really think that they've like immediately recognized the opportunity to move forward on this right now. And so that explains their rhetoric around Charlie Kirk, and it explains why they're moving on this so quickly.
And it's happening in tandem with Trump's lawsuits against media entities, some of which have been successful thanks to the spinelessness of CBS and some others. And so now he's suing the New York Times, the most risible lawsuit ever filed in the history of lawsuits, perhaps, if you read the complaint that begins with Trump praising himself for having been just the most fantastic public figure in the history of the world. But yeah, he's, what is it? Something like $19 billion he's suing. Now, the New York Times can afford to defend itself.
Right. Well, but not just that. Any of the CBS can afford to defend itself too, but CBS has business in front of the government is the problem, right? It's owned by Paramount, which desperately needs regulatory approval. That's the leverage that Trump has.
Yes.
The New York Times is just a media business, and so it doesn't have the same incentive by the ownership to capitulate.
Yeah. And he's also, we've almost forgot to say, he's also suing the Wall Street Journal over the Epstein story. And but the lawsuits against the media are part of a sort of pincer movement where some elements of the administration are going to be trying to attack critics by, say, the FBI showing up at John Bolton's home and perhaps bringing charges against him, trumped up, no pun intended, because he's been a critic. There's that. There's then, you know, they're attempting to look at the tax exempt status of organizations that fund of left wing foundations, for example. They are, and then the lawsuits and the pressure, and it is already. I'm curious. Do you agree that it has already chilled expression in this country? Because I feel like it already has.
I feel like it has as well. It's hard to put your finger on that, but I do feel that that's happened. Yeah, I think people are at least watchful of retribution. At minimum, people are just careful, cautious, saying, "Do we have to do this? Do we have to say this? Can we, you know, let's run the traps on what Trump can do to us?"
Yeah.
Afterward, I think that is a different mindset that people have right now. But I think there's another aspect to what he's doing to media, which is beyond just regulatory leverage, which is I think he's managed to put some of his own loyalists in charge of some of these entities, right? He illegally ignored Congress's restrictions on TikTok.
Yes.
TikTok was supposed to be shut down. It was an overwhelming vote. It's clear as day law. And he just ignored it so that he could make a deal to basically put TikTok in the hands of a loyalist, of an ally, which is what he's done. I found it very telling not long ago when he denounced NBC and ABC, but not CBS, which to me indicates that he believes that the sale of the ownership to the Ellersons and apparently putting Barry Weiss in some supervisory role of the news is going to basically defang that and turn it into some kind of controlled organization. Now, that may or may not be the case, but I think the way he talked about it indicates that he expects it to be the case.
So we have this all out sort of frontal assault on free expression and on the law. As you point out, the TikTok thing was just a textbook example of the president in full, just completely flouting a law. So against this assault on our liberties, we have the Democratic Party. And sometimes I feel, we got to do better, because the Democrats, if you look at their popularity, if you look at how people feel about the Democrats, I was just looking, our colleague at the Bulwark, who does the reporting on the Hispanic vote, was reporting on the polling and among Hispanics. So Trump is drastically unpopular now among Hispanic voters, who gave him a big boost in the 2024 election. So he's lost a lot of support. On the other hand, when you ask a focus group of Hispanic Trump voters from 2024, whether if the election were rerun today, whether they would support Kamala Harris, nobody said yes. They said no, they would either vote third party or stay home. So the Democrats are still radically unpopular. So, what is your sense of their groping toward becoming more acceptable? Do you see the signs are not good? The signs are that they are sort of having internal squabbles about whether they should just be sort of more left than they were, or maybe drastically more left than they were.
I'm more optimistic than you for two reasons. Okay. First of all, I think opposition parties are often more unpopular in polls than maybe they actually are. At least they appear more unpopular because a significant number of their own partisans are just upset that they have no power. And so and this happens to both parties, right? Like the Republican Party was absolutely catastrophically unpopular for the first 2 years of the Obama presidency. That had nothing to do with what was going to happen in the 2010 midterm elections, which was a Republican sweep. Number one. Number two, I do think you're right that there is this overhang of the Biden administration and a lot of positions that the Democrats took that were to the left of a lot of the country. And some of those were problems beyond Biden's control. Some of them were not. And I don't think they've managed to deal adequately with the reputational harm that the party suffered as a consequence of them. However, I do think people are actually dealing with it now.
Okay.
I felt like there was absolutely no desire in the Democratic Party to acknowledge defeat after Trump's victory in 2016, or to do anything except move further to the left, right? The dominant view in the Democratic Party when Trump won was that even though Hillary Clinton had moved to the left of Obama when pushed by Bernie Sanders, she hadn't moved left enough. was the problem. And they set out to resolve that. And there was very, very little resistance to the Democratic Party moving even further to the left in 2020. The entire Democratic primary was just a race to the left. I mean, when I was saying, why are you getting up on stage and raising your hands to these positions that are toxically unpopular, I was screaming into a void.
Right.
That's not the case anymore. There are people on both sides of this argument now. As you say, there are people who want the party to move further to the left, but there are people who think it needs to move back to the center. So this is, to me, a totally different atmosphere than there was in the last time they were in this situation. And we don't know how it's going to turn out.
So you mentioned a minute ago that there were things that were beyond Biden's control. What were you thinking of?
Look, there was a huge global wave of inflation. That was the biggest single problem he faced. I don't think he did everything he could to handle it. But even if he did handle it in the optimal way, I do think that would have hurt him. That was just, I mean, every single incumbent party in the world became toxically unpopular in 2021 and 2022. So okay. I think you could have done better, but that was hard.
I understand. Let me ask you about one other thing though, that really just is something that I worry about, which is Trump is doing potentially catastrophic damage, not just to our economy, but to the world economy through tariffs. And the Democrats have always been very weak on this. Biden did not repeal the tariffs that Trump put in place. And they criticize it, but I don't have a sense that they have a principled objection to tariffs. And in fact, I think they're kind of soft on this issue. What is your view?
Well, I don't have a principled objection to tariffs. I've got a pragmatic objection to tariffs. I think, generally speaking, they're with a few exceptions. I think tariffs are a pretty inefficient tool for raising revenue and whatever you're trying to accomplish with them. But you're right. It's not, I don't think they're pure, libertarian, total free traders. However,
well, it's worse than that.
Right. No, and you're right that Biden basically said, he decided he was going to co-opt the blue collar support, Trump's blue collar support by keeping the tariffs in place and taking a number of other, pro-labor measures. And what I've written about this, none of those things worked.
There's
no evidence that any of those things had any effect. But I do think, again, this is an issue where I think there's some debate within the party. I think some people just want to say we didn't go far enough. We just need to go even more in that direction. And then we'll get the blue collar people. But I also think you have people who are questioning this and are going to be running on a rollback the Trump tariffs platform in 2028. I think that's going to be a really interesting debate within the party.
Yeah.
I don't know which side is going to win, but I do think the pro-free trade side has the enormous advantage of being able to be the anti-Trump side in this. And and when they're having this argument in 2028, all they'll say is you just want to do what Donald Trump's policy. And they'll say, no, our tariffs are totally different than Donald Trump's. And the pro-free trade people will just roll right over them, I think. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, so one of the things that Biden could have done is reverse those tariffs, and that would have helped him fight inflation.
And
he refused to do it. So again, if the Democrats are going to run on bringing prices down, which is very hard to do once they're up, as we know, usually prices don't come down.
No, they don't come down.
Wages can come up to meet them, but prices rarely come down. But the one way that you can actually bring prices down is, what do you know?
Push the lower prices button. Why don't you push the lower prices button?
Push the button.
Right. And Biden's like, the unions want us to. It's you only have this one button that can make the prices go down. Press the button.
Yeah. Right. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. And then the whole transgender mess that the Democrats have gotten themselves into, where this is a case, I believe, and let me hear your views, where Democrats were trying to appease or please a particular constituency that they feel is beleaguered, and in some ways, trans people are definitely beleaguered. And by this administration, they've been outright attacked, which is horrible.
Attacked, dehumanized, and discriminated.
Dehumanized, no question. That's really bad. On the other hand, Democrats found themselves taking positions there are six different genders, and we agree with that, and endorsing the idea that boys should be able to play, natal boys should be able to play on the sports teams of girls, and other things that have made it. I mean, with those very voters that we were just talking about, the working class, union type voter, those issues actually loom very large. They don't like it that their kids go to school and are told there are six genders. They don't like it.
Yeah, the biggest two problems that I think the Democrats have on this issue is the sports issue and the youth medicalization,
right?
The speed and the processes under which you give life-altering, irreversible chemical or medical treatment to people to change, right? And how fast that can happen. I don't think there's a question about, among Democrats, there's no question. Among Republicans, there's. Among Democrats, there's no question about whether adults should be able to do whatever they want. But when you've got teenagers going through this, the question is how much, you know, how much diagnosis do you need to get? And here's the thing that the activists have done with extraordinary success. They do, this is what all activists do. All activists want to push their allies to go all the way in their agenda. And mm-hmm. so they don't want to break the issue up into pieces, right? They don't want someone to be 75% on their side. They want everyone to be 100% on their side. So what they will say, it's all or nothing. Right. Yeah. The NRA will say, like, you need to be for giving, you know, submachine guns to drunk toddlers or else you hate guns.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Right. And yes. But the trans movement has done this too. Say, like, if you want to say, like, I'm for trans rights, I'm going to fight the dehumanization. But maybe, you know, with the college athletes, we need to have some rules to make sure that there isn't some real unfair situation. They will say you're throwing trans people under the bus. You hate trans people. And they've smeared people. They've destroyed people's reputations. They've been incredibly aggressive about making people afraid in liberal spaces to contradict anything they say, even the most unreasonable things, like when they say that trans women have absolutely no athletic advantages under any circumstances. That Leah Thomas was just a civil rights hero who broke the plane, right? So I think there's been a little bit of progress in the Democrats in being able to say we want to stand with trans people against the attacks on the right and support civil rights, but we don't need to take the most unreasonable positions across the board in every single instance. And I think you have a couple Democrats who have spoken out, but they've been pretty viciously attacked. And I think the rest of the party, I think, is leery enough to not want to do what Kamala Harris did, which is go on camera and say she's for free gender reassignment surgery for prisoners and detained migrants. I don't think they're going to do that anymore. But they also don't want to come out and just say, you know what, sports are different. You know what, we need to be a little bit careful with teenagers. And we're moving back a couple of notches in our position.
They have to do that because they're so outside the mainstream on this and they're alienating the voters. So they just have to.
I mean, I wrote about that. I wrote about how you can compromise on those two issues and still support 90% of the pro-trans rights agenda.
Absolutely.
And support all the things that are popular and important.
Exactly. I mean, it's 100%. Adults should be able to do whatever they want. They should be respected. Right. They should be treated with dignity.
Addressed by their chosen names.
Addressed by their chosen names, et cetera. Yes. All of that. And and yet, you know, when it comes to children, cautious, careful. Right. You know, don't want to medicate, do anything irreversible to a child they might later regret or might be a mistake. Right. I mean, these things, it just seems so common sense. But, you know, Jonathan, we live in an age of illiberalism, and there was a tremendous amount of illiberalism on the left that had people afraid to say what they really thought. The people in the academy, for example, I can't tell you how many people I spoke to when I was writing my last book who said, well, I can't say this publicly, you know, but there was a definite chill that was imposed by the left. And now we are seeing the backlash and also just their own homegrown extremism on the right, which in my opinion is worse, it's much worse. But now we're seeing, you know, this like illiberalism in the saddle, just riding over everything on the right. And
with no internal argument. Right. I mean, we had people like you and me who were speaking out against this. I've been doing it for 10 years.
Yes,
on the left.
You have.
No one is willing to speak out against what Trump is doing on the right.
That's right. It is. It's a total capture of an entire movement, political party, all the intellectual organs folded. If you look at the Claremont Review now, it's a rag. It's just, yeah. So all right, there we are. I think we've solved all the problems. Everybody just needs to be reasonable and liberal like us.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan Chait, for
you
what
so
you
much,
do.
Thank you so much, Mona. This has been great.
Yeah, enjoyed it. Take
Thanks
care.
Thanks a lot.